One night, when little John was going to bed, he got in bed, pulled the sheet up under his chin, and looked up, and oh my goodness, he'd left the light on. Well, that's a no-no. He knows Daddy doesn't approve of that. So he hopped out of bed real quick, and he went over, and he turned the light off. And when he did that, his emotions went down just a little bit because, what? Well, he'd done something that Daddy would approve of. And that felt so good. And so he switched the light on and off again. And that made him feel just a little bit better. And he switched it on and off again. And a smile came across his face just a little bit because, you see, he knew he was pleasing his Daddy. He was doing something that Daddy would say, "Hey, that's a good job, John." And that night, before John went to bed, he had turned the light on and off, 12, 13 times. But when he went to bed, it was done. It was done well. It was done perfectly. And he knew Daddy would be proud of him. And so his emotions were down a little bit. Well, the next night, every day was bad for John. The next night, his emotions were high again. And if it worked last night, it'll work tonight. So he went over and he turned the light switch on and off 3 or 4 times, and it helped. And so he turned it off some more, and 12, 13 times when he went to bed, his emotions were down a little bit. He's developing what we call a coping mechanism, isn't he? And the next night, he did the same thing. And the next night, he did the same thing. I hope I can communicate this to you. This is a very difficult teaching for me because I've lived this with people. The psychology book would say that John is building what you would call a pattern for obsessive compulsive behavior, meaning that when your emotions are so high, when the pressure just seems to be hitting at the top of your head, a thought will come to you. And it so obsesses you, so gives you the out for the situation that you're in, that you're compelled to go through with it. Obsessive compulsive behavior. When my emotions are just running away, a thought comes to me that so obsesses me, that gives me the way out of this pressure situation that I'm compelled to go through with it. All right, let's grow John up. And his dad isn't around now. Oh, but John's patterned now. He is a super, super perfectionist. Oh, but he doesn't let it all hang out. He keeps it all in. And his emotions are high all the time. And when they hit 10, it feels like the top of his head is about to come off. And if he doesn't get relief, his right arm begins getting numb. He's in college now and he's married. He writes a term paper. And it's done perfectly, isn't it? Of course it's done perfectly. He gives it to his wife to read. He wants approval. But remember, I told you that a perfectionist always has another pattern in there for super sensitivity. Please don't critique my work because I don't want anybody telling me that it's not perfect. So he gave his paper to his wife. She read it and she gave it back to him and then very cautiously said, "It's an excellent paper, John, but there were 3 punctuation marks that weren't in, so I put them in for you. Can John handle that?" "No, John can't handle that. Because you see, it wasn't done perfectly." Do you understand that? Would you nod? Do you understand what's happening? But he doesn't have time to redo it. It's got to be turned in. So he starts over to across the campus to the professor's office to turn it in, and his head is pounding and his arm's beginning to get a little numb, and this pressure's coming, and a thought comes to him of a way out. And this is the thought: "Well, I'll just tell Professor West that the paper isn't mine, that it's just wrong." A ridiculous thought. But what has John learned? If a thought comes to me that will relieve this pressure, then do it, even if it is ridiculous. So he takes his paper to the professor, and Dr. West says, "Thank you, John," because he knows it's a perfect paper. And John stands there. And Dr. West says, "You wanted to talk to me, John?" And John said, "Yes, Dr. West. I wish I could drag it out like you know it would be, but we don't have the time. But it would be first on one foot and then on the other, where John would say, Dr. West, that paper, in the truest sense of the word, Dr. West, that paper isn't mine. Oh, John, well, what do you mean? Now comes the hard part. Well, my wife put in some punctuation marks. Oh, but it's done. And the pressure comes down. Well, when this young man came in for counseling, now you see he's built a stronghold. When this young man came in for counseling, you know what was happening in his life? He's married and now he has a baby. And you know how those babies pick up on those hostility vibes that come out. And John's hostility vibes were up at 9.5 and 10 most of the time. And so that baby would cry when John was with him. And he's babysitting for his wife today. And that little baby's crying. And the more the baby cries, the more severe is John's headache and his arm's getting numb. You see, his whole body's reacting to this horrible situation he's in. And the more the baby cries, the worse it becomes. And John looks over at the kitchen cabinet, and there's a butcher knife on the kitchen cabinet. And a thought comes to John. I bet he'd hush if I jabbed that knife into his stomach. Now, that's a horrible thought, isn't it? But what's John learned? That if a thought comes to me that will relieve this horrible pressure, then do it. So when this young man came in for counseling, he was staying up all night in a bedroom with the door locked, with his wife in another bedroom with her child with the door locked. That is a story of a stronghold being built. Now that's a rather bizarre one, isn't it? Some of you know people that have bizarre strongholds like that. You can't relate to that maybe, but like I said, it would communicate maybe what I'm trying to tell you about and would review for you how strongholds get patterned in. But let's make it a little more understandable. Let's instead talk about the lady who was the perfectionist. She and her husband had a cup of tea before they went to bed. And she got up and went on and washed her face, and he took the teacups in and put them on the kitchen sink cabinet. And so she goes in and gets a drink and sees the teacups there, and the thought comes to her, those should be in the dishwasher. Oh, but I'm too tired. So she goes on to bed, gets in bed, pulls the cover up, nestles down, and the thought comes to her again, those dishes should be in the dishwasher. And she rolls over, and then another thought comes. If there were any tea stains on the saucers, they're going to stain the cabinet. And if there was any tea left in the teacups, it's going to stain the teacups. Throw the sheet off and get up and go in and put the teacup in the dishwasher. Now that's a little more on our level, isn't it? And some of us are like that. Or, you know, you just can't go to bed until you gather all the dirty laundry and put it up. Now some of you can't relate to that at all. You don't gather dirty laundry except every 2 weeks. It mildews in the corner. You don't have perfectionistic flesh. You're slovenly. They're both patterns. Deceptive fantasies. We have been deceived into coping in ways that are against the true knowledge of God. The second category was an imposing defense. Oh, so many of us have built imposing defenses. I think of the young man who had been so terribly rejected in his childhood, and the way he verbalized it was this. He took his emotions, he put them in a can, he screwed the lid on real tight, and then he sat down on it. And he built a wall around himself, 40 feet thick, that, as he said, a Mack truck couldn't tear down. Oh, we've got walls built around us, imposing defenses. And then, of course, the last category, every thought, taking every thought captive. We all see that. Press has just talked about that. Thoughts that come to us, I can't do it. He has no right to treat me that way. I do everything wrong. No one loves me. Those are the three categories. Now then, the scripture told us that there was a war going on. I always hit the wrong button there. Romans 7, 21 through 23 tells us this. You may turn to that if you'd like. I'll be reading it from the New American Standard. I find then the principle that evil, right here, that evil is present in me, the one who wishes to do good. For I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man. But I see a different law in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me prisoner of the law of sin, which is in my members. This is the diagram that Bill used the other night, essentially.